Hi, you're with Truth News Radio, and it is the 6th of December 2014. It is a great pleasure to be with you, as always. Now, today's show, we've got a big lineup. In the second hour, I have a really important guest coming on, Simon Trezellian, who is a motivational speaker with a very long history in the UK Special Forces, working in covert operations, who kind of resigned from all that a few years ago and realised that that he was on the wrong side and has decided now to help people and to speak out a little bit about what he understands about the power structures of this world. And a really interesting guy. He currently lives in LA. He's been in Australia for many years, but he now lives in LA, and he's actually working on a film script, which he'll be telling us a bit about if we have time, in the second hour. And that's going to be a really interesting look into... Well, we're going to just kind of explore this question of who really controls the world. You know, what forces are they? What agencies, what families, Illuminati, Jesuits, you know, what's really going on there? We probably won't break any radically new ground, but we'll give it a, you know, give it a stab and hopefully come up with something that's interesting. But before we get into that, I have on the line for the first hour, for the entire hour, I have my friend Josh Jackson, and very, very familiar to our listeners, back on the show after a very long absence. Josh.
G'day, folks. How are you? Good to see you.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, not see you, but hear you across the airwaves of Berlin.
Indeed.
From Berlin to Australia. Worldwide. Amazing.
Beaming out worldwide on Logos Radio Network, as we do. And, of course, you know, listeners in Austin, Texas have become familiar with this show, and, you know, hopefully next time I go to Austin I'll be famous. Anyway, we'll see. But Josh, you're in Berlin. Now, one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on today is the fact that you are German by descent. Your father's German, and you grew up in Australia, but you're half German, and you live in Germany. And
Can I clear something up?
Yeah.
Actually, I'm sitting in one of Germany's large rooms here, so it's a bit echoey.
They've
got these old big they're called Altbau, old buildings, and beautiful old big ceilings, so it's a bit echoey. In terms of heritage, well, it's kind of a tricky one, that one, because I was actually born stateless, and so was my father. So,
really?
You know, within Germany, and then, it's Irish mother and then father's. I mean, you know, it's, I consider myself an earthling because it's just all too hard. You know, I think most people have got generally genes from all over the place by this stage in human evolution. It's kind of hard to say you are from here. Maybe you.
Well, I have that problem to a greater degree. I mean, my father was American. My mother is Australian. But what does Australian mean? Well, you know, some of my ancestors were from the UK. Some of them were actually convicts. But it's a huge mix. Just getting back to your heritage, I mean, you speak German. Your father speaks German. Family's got a background in Germany.
Yeah.
And today we want to talk about a very familiar, one would say all too familiar, topic of Germany, and one which probably is tiresome and painful to have to go over, again and again and again, as we do over time and over history, and with all the Hollywood and all of the endless, you know, reenactments of World War II and the Nazi era. But the reason why I want to retread some of those steps today is that in recent years, right, there has been a resurgence of what we might call revisionism of history. And it comes from a sector of our community who, quite rightly, I should say, are very, very critical and suspicious of everything that the history books and the government tells them, because we live in a world of lies. We live in a world where so much is actually deception and so much about history is wrong. And people who aren't very well educated can't easily differentiate between the accurate bits and the inaccurate bits. I mean, even people who are educated can't. And I wouldn't even call myself very educated, but I have a bachelor's degree, whatever that, you know, means. But, you know, I don't, I'm not clear in my mind. I'm a Chardonnay, you know, intellectual. But, I mean, the point is, like, I don't have a very, very definite knowledge of what really happened or what didn't happen. For example, just a totally different subject, the Australian Aborigines. Yeah. There are people who claim that the Australian Aborigines were essentially decimated in a kind of deliberate genocide. There are other people who claim that that is actually not true. And there's actually a big debate about that in Tasmania. You know, some people say the Tasmanian Aborigines were wiped out deliberately. And then there are other books that came out that said that's all false. And you have these, and I don't really know the truth. But what we do know is that Aborigines were treated very badly by the colonialists. Many died. There's no disputing that. You know, but then there's questions of exact numbers, questions of whether it was deliberate, right? Exactly similar things in World War II. We know that many, many people died in World War II. We know that many Jews died in World War II. We know that many other races and ethnicities died. And including
intellectually or disabled people, intellectually disabled, gypsies, you know, I mean, the list goes on and on, blacks,
and you know, some people question some of those figures, and I'm not going to say that's wrong either. You know, great question. We should be able to question anything, and it should never be illegal, as it is in Germany, to question how many people died in Auschwitz. You should be able to do that, but unfortunately, there is also this overly zealous, politically correct thing that wants to suppress what they call, you know, Holocaust deniers, historical revisionism. And you can sort of understand from one perspective, because Nazism was such a powerful political force that they felt that we can't allow it to have a resurgence on the basis of people who become apologists for it, thereby making it acceptable again. And I can somewhat understand why in that special case they did bring those laws in, but I don't agree with those laws. But,
it's very important to always question, but at the same time we need to look at the meaning of history.
Yeah.
What is it? Is it actually that important to have an absolute truth of what happened and where? Or as the original meaning of history is more coming from, if we look at ancient Greece and these sort of these stories of having stories, his story, to then look at those and see what the meaning behind those stories is. What is the moral of this historic story?
Yes,
and the moral is far more important. Actually, I mean, it is important to definitely have a recall of what happened for sure. But if let's say you know, that the numbers are totally false. Let's say it's that, you know, which I don't believe they are. But if they are, it still doesn't matter. This guy was a psychopath killer who killed, let's say it's even 100 people. I mean, imagine if a private serial killer went around and killed 100 people. It would be in the news forever because it's just sick and psycho. And so
You're talking about Hitler specifically there, are you?
I was talking about Hitler
Of course, you know, Hitler himself probably didn't kill anyone, you know. But anyway, let's continue,
Well, yeah, I mean, he ordered those things.
Yeah.
But, you know, in a court of law, if I order someone's murder, then I'm still guilty. Okay.
As Barack Obama is guilty of killing untold numbers of people in Afghanistan and other countries with drone attacks.
Yeah, or George Bush, or, you know, Bush Senior. Any leader who's sending troops off both in defense and offense is generally on behalf of the industrial military complex, of course. So, I think what we need to go back to, though, is this concept of history and truth and epistemology in general, and how we define truth. Because as the internet starts to evolve this the sacredity of truth and the lineage of truth. Where does it come from? Because we know that the victors always tell the story and define history. So I think we can see that, sorry that the internet's dropped out, so I'm sort of picking up here from where it left off. We have a definition of history that's usually centralized. And what the internet is doing for that concept of history is now decentralizing that. If we look at where in the past, generally, it's kind of difficult to define a general history because there's many stories within the one big story. And so to get a better picture of a true history, we would have to take an account of many people's stories. And this is one thing that's happening, is that now this concept of a centralized victor tells the truth in, I'm not saying that the truth hasn't been told with history in some parts, but what is truth? And the concept of what is truth, a lot of people would say that math is the only truth, but then, you know, programmers, I'm sure, will say, well, JavaScript will still give you rounding errors, so 0.1 plus 0.2 in JavaScript isn't 0.3. No, it's 0.3.0000000004. So there's these weird rounding errors, but yeah. That's besides the besides the point. There's math is the closest thing we've got to truth, but when it comes to stories and more. It's harder to define. So I think the internet is giving a voice to a more granular level for the first time. What is hard is that we're seeing the emergence of a very controlled internet slowly. This, however, is changing, and the folks that know me understand that my firm. We're quite obsessed with blockchain technology and yeah. The concept that was brought forth by Bitcoin, and the blockchain is for the first time a decentralized historical database, an unalterable, unmutable database backed by math. So for the first time, what we're seeing now. As money was the first application, Bitcoin was the first application on top of this blockchain technology. But as we're moving forward, we're seeing new applications. And some of these include data entry and time stamping without a notar, without trust.
We are just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm talking to Josh Jackson about some historical matters and some kind of complex stuff. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Radio. Great pleasure to be with you today. It's always a great pleasure to be doing this show, and I do encourage you to drop over to the website, have a look at our material there going back many, many years, and a lot of really, really interesting interviews. And in the second hour today, another really original interview coming up. And if you feel like contributing and helping Truth News, why not become a subscriber? It's very, very easy to do. I've set it up so it's incredibly easy and quick. And you will get a T-shirt, and you'll get a DVD with some of our shows sent to you in the mail. And you'll also be able to help independent media, which is what that's going to make the difference. You know, that's one of the key things that's going to make a difference in the world. Now, Josh, we're in danger of getting swamped by the topic that we started off here to talk about. And it's partly my fault because I actually like to take it in various different directions. But what I want to do is just kind of steer us back a little bit. I want to consider this question about revisionism, particularly revisionism of Nazi Germany. And I want to look at it dispassionately, and I want to acknowledge the right and the importance of anyone who wants to research and find out and has a different view, because I really do think it's important. I don't minimize it, because it's something that I'm doing in other areas. You know, I disagree with the history of the United States of what happened on September 11. And, you know, and that's what's written in the history books, and I think it's completely wrong, right? And people have told me that I'm a nut for having those views.
At the same time, we have a lot of research and a lot of scientific evidence that has come forth and been explained about those days of 9/11 and the past. So there's a difference. You know, the Germans are extremely good at being methodical, and this is also stems in its evil periods. So the account from everything was written down. Everything was written down, and everything was documented, and everything was chronicled. It was one of the most chronicled wars of our time, and a lot of stuff was burnt after the war to try and remove. But generally, you know, you just can't get rid of that much information. Let's just talk about
a few things that we can say are facts that really no one's going to dispute. I mean, even the Holocaust deniers aren't going to dispute this, right? I mean, Hitler became the Führer, and that was his word, right? Which was done as part of what they called the Enabling Act after he'd been democratically elected. But it's a word that's only ever been used by Hitler, and it is a word that had special meanings, way, way beyond chancellor, way beyond prime minister or president, or even, I mean, it's akin to the word king, but it has a meaning from within the Nazi Volk concept of total power, does it not?
Well, the actual German meaning of Führer is leader. So when we went on a hike through the mountains, we had the Bergführer. So you have the mountain leader. So,
okay, well, that's interesting. Okay, well, thanks for clarifying that. So this word is not it's not like a taboo word.
No, I mean it's a normal. You know, I mean, now since the World War II, you know, it's a little bit like the mustache. The mustache never killed anyone, but no one wears that thing anymore because it's just
Well, but, okay, let's just talk about you know, the actual political realities that occurred in Nazi Germany. Hitler was elected in a democratic election, but after the burning of the Reichstag, he seized power. And when he seized power, all of the normal civil rights and protections of a normal democracy were completely wiped, were they not? I mean, this really happened.
They were. It was very similar, and I don't want to, you know, make a massive comparison, but it's very similar to what happened after 9/11, where the Patriot Act was hailed in because of the wording of the title. Everyone was in shock, and it was easy to pass such a thing. Also, you know, the speeches that Adolf Hitler gave were so impassionate and raw and loud that people just fell in love. And people were suffering at that stage, you know, and that's the thing about a lot of these documentaries is that they don't. You know, it's not like it's false. It's about half truths,
yeah,
and keeping and mixing half-truths with truth, as well as omitting a lot of facts. So that, and that can be just as dangerous.
Well, when you say these documentaries, there's one in particular which you've had a look at, which is called The Greatest History Never Told, which I've had it recommended to me by a couple of people. I haven't watched the whole thing. I've watched about a third of it. It appears to be a giant sort of apologia for the Nazis. It doesn't present itself as that. It doesn't say, hey, you know, this is about saying Hitler was a good guy. But if you watch it, you will have to, if you believe it, you would have to think Hitler was a wonderful person, wouldn't you? Imagine you didn't know anything else. You only ever saw that. You didn't know anything about history. You came from Mars. You watched that. You think Hitler was this wonderful man who they persecuted. That appears to be what the movie is projecting.
People have to understand is that he, from what I got from it, is really that, you know, first of all, it's terribly made. It's just basically taking films that have been made and overdubbing, you know, taking bits and cuts and then overdubbing his own narrative over the top.
Yeah.
It's grainy. It's awful. It's just really hard to watch this thing. Anyway, basically what it does is that as it goes through following this life of this guy who's really had a very extremely sad and violent life. His father beat the living hell out of him. And that was actually normal, child rearing, in Prussia. Or general Europe in those days, and not that Europe existed as such, but in this region of the world and most regions of the world, it was normal to smack the living daylights out of your kid every so often.
Sure.
And this has been proven now with modern psychiatry and psychology is that it generally leads to lack of apathy. Lack of empathy. Lack of empathy. And so you have this child who's been extremely abused and then ended up serving in the Bavarian Armed Forces through World War One. and you have in this documentary this beautiful music all the time, this soft and it's very nice and
it's very hypnotic, actually, isn't it?
And poor guy, and look at and he's, you know, and really, I mean, he ended up being a total psychopath. Like he constantly wanted to go back into battles, you know, and you can see what, because he has this bloodlust. He really wants to, and these distorted, perverted obsessions with race and stuff. So he didn't want to serve under certain armies because mixed races I'm going a little bit off track here.
No, thanks. It's actually good. It's good to hear your knowledge and background about this. So do continue. We're going to break shortly. We're just about to hit break.
What has to be remembered is that people can easily manipulate feelings by adding a soundtrack and music behind certain things, which is important.
We are just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and we're talking a bit about Adolf Hitler history with Josh Jackson, who's part German and lives in Berlin. So we will be right back after this very short break. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and we are talking about Adolf Hitler. Interesting subject. Josh, we're talking about the movie there, The Greatest History Never Told, and you made a point about the music. Now, this is very important, and this is something that harks back to a point I was talking about in last week's show about the susceptibility of human beings to hypnotic manipulation. And this is something that Aldous Huxley talked about a lot, and I had that speech from Aldous Huxley in my last show where he specifically talks about how vulnerable people are, and it's actually really dangerous. People can be swayed in their thinking about objective reality by very what might seem minor things that you wouldn't think would have such an effect. I believe that the background track of that film has a hypnotic effect. It's not a very well-made film. I mean, I can't say it's an expert piece of propaganda. It's a very poorly made piece of propaganda, but something about the music, because it's really only the music that holds it together. Apart from that, it's really just scrolling text on the screen. I mean, it has nothing much to it. But I think that this is something to be aware of, is that we are, many of us, are very susceptible to little techniques like that, which put you in a suggestive hypnotic state of mind, and suddenly you can have an emotional reaction. Yeah, it's a mood. You actually get an emotion that develops, and that emotion can be anchored to sort of facts or factoids. That's what NLP is all about. You know, NLP is a science of that, and so people can be programmed to believe things.
Yeah, it's quite. If anyone's seen any of the Darren Brown stuff, he's quite phenomenal with the use of language, with the use of music, with the use of input as a whole. And how that can manipulate someone quite starkly and quite amazingly. And you always think, oh, I can never be manipulated. But and some people are harder to manipulate than others. But generally, there's definitely a malleability. Anyone can try it. Putting on a movie and then sticking a soft soundtrack behind it, you know, on the stereo, or sticking some hardcore metal.
Yeah.
The difference that you feel is quite large. And so that's why sometimes just being able to read something without anything else, just pure text, can be a little bit easier to come to than truth. But again, truth, it is really a objective truth is a difficult philosophical concept, and a lot of people are wary of it, and that's why I think.
Starts with honesty. I believe it starts with internal honesty, and you have to work from that point. You know, it's not for me. It's not about objective knowledge in an ultimate sense, because I don't know, I can't objectively know what I didn't witness. And even when I witness things, I can't be sure that my eyes didn't trick me. You know, so you can't really know, but it's important to try, and it's important to be honest with yourself and not lie. If you are lying, you've got to admit to yourself that you're lying if you want to follow the path of truth. Right, it's more a journey. It's a path. It's not a destination.
Well, there's this concept of it was just truth that swans are white. It was total truth that swans are white, and never there's no such thing as a black swan. And even when some people first see a black swan, they refuse to believe it. They oh no, it must be a trick. It was dyed. It was dyed black or something like that before realizing, no, there actually is. So even once someone sees an objective truth that there is a black swan, that they'll start, if they've been told their whole life there is only such thing as a white swan, they'll straight away try to come with logical thinking of, well, there must be some sort of explanation, which then... You delve further using the scientific method to try and really discover, well, no, it's a genetic fact that there are black swans. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. But there's also this other factor that where people will choose to believe a certain thing, even when they know it's not correct, because they believe it is socially expedient, to believe that swans are white, even when they know that swans might not be white. And I'll just give you a very concrete example of this. And again, we're diverging a bit, but I just an illustrative example in the topic of climate change. I've had many debates with people about climate change where we get into the subject of facts and we get into the subject of the science. And we get into the question about, you know, is the Earth's temperature really increasing as a result of higher CO2 levels, and many times people with various levels of scientific background will tell you you're wrong and your facts are wrong. You know, as the people who are on the side of the IPCC and believe that we have a real problem here, but I've had many cases where I've been debating with people who, once you present some pretty convincing evidence from your side, instead of trying to work against it directly, they will say something like, well, isn't it better if we just believe it, even if it's not totally true, because it means that we'll be better people and we'll pollute the world less if we believe that this problem exists. Do you see where I'm coming from? That people will actually endorse a lie because they believe it is for the greater good. This really happens.
Yeah, and that comes back to my original concept that I was talking about in terms of history. And what is important is the absolute objective truth of history important, or is the story and the moral important? And I would say it's a mix of both, absolutely. There's two different ways of looking at history, but we have to, this concept of mythology back in the day, stories were all about the moral. It wasn't about a perfect recount. I mean, if you look at a lot of the ancient cultures, look at Aboriginal culture or ancient Greece, a lot of the stories were about the moral. So that this and this happened, what do you take away from that? Well, you take away that power and absolute power is shocking. You know, when it comes to World War II, you know, that people end up being massive amounts of genocide can happen, or the insanity of crowds. And what can we take away from the insane levels of violence that can be inflicted when you give a crowd, give someone total power? And so I think that's what we have to take away from history, and not to forget the power of the moral behind history. Whether you know, the details here or there of exactly how many million people died, or exactly what year did he move there to there, or minute did that and that happen? I mean, how granular do you want to get? The fact of the matter is that absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And that is a very, very, very important lesson to us all that we should never forget.
Well, of course, yeah. I mean, you talk about the moral, but see, people can weave a different moral. The people who are the architects of historical revisionism have an equally powerful moral universe. I think you're going to find that it's just a different moral universe which has its own compelling beliefs behind it. And for me, it actually often does hinge on facts. Because when a fact is presented as such, but is actually not true, and that is then used as the basis for a moral to be drawn, there we have a big problem. So, the Nazis claimed that there was a terrible conspiracy of Jews and communists against Germany, and that they had to do all these terrible things to protect Germany, to save the German people. Now, that is, and that is what the modern day neo-Nazis and revisionists also still claim. They believe that conspiracy existed and still exists. When we get back from the break, I want to talk about that a bit more, because there are aspects of that are right, but there are aspects of it that are also completely false. But we'll be back shortly. Stay with us.
Happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it?
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're talking a little bit about Nazi Germany, historical revisionism, and a movie that was made about Adolf Hitler, which appears to be kind of like an apologia about Hitler called The Greatest Story Never Told. Now, we don't really have a lot of time left in the show. In fact, this is the last segment. Here it goes quick. Josh, a couple of points I just want to make very quickly. The film that we've been just touching upon makes a number of statements during the length of it about other parts of the world and atrocities that were committed under Stalin and practices that were committed under the United States government in relation to racial laws, and they do that to kind of like to compare that to Nazi Germany, to say, well, Nazi Germany wasn't any worse than these places. And then, of course, they do illustrate a lot of things about the Stalinist terror, which I totally agree with, were absolutely appalling. And I'm the first person to say Stalin was a monster, a psychopath. He was on a par with Hitler. There is nothing about that guy that is any good whatsoever. And what happened in Soviet Russia is a terrible, terrible tragedy.
Yeah, but I mean, just to quickly, I mean, Hitler really idolized Stalin for a long time until Germany became more powerful, in which then he started looking at him as a puppet of the German, as a puppet dictator under the control of him, under the control of the Germans. So, you know, just to add that.
Yes, yeah, indeed, and yet, I mean, tyrants, psychopaths learn from each other. The game of power. It is the game of power, and it's still being played now. It's a little different now. The world is not the same configuration as it was then. There's various games of power. Those times were really times of the dictator, and there were dictators all over the place then. It was a kind of a different style of tyranny to what we see today. Sorry, did you want to interject there, Josh?
No, I just wanted to. Just quickly, because we're running out of time, mention that a lot of this film's started talking about how, you know, this is where the omissions come in to distorting the reality of truth. So, for instance, it talks about how Germany, after the First World War, had massive chunks of it taken away by France and different countries that surround it. Yeah. You know, the lions started shrinking and making Germany smaller. Then Germany couldn't pay its reparations, this war debt. So they were printing like crazy to try and print themselves out of debt, and then causing massive inflation. This was the German government printing itself out of debt. And then they couldn't pay their debt anymore. And the French started coming in and really bullying and say, well, we'll take it then. So they started coming in, and which is true. You know, it's the truth. It did happen. There's a lot of documentation of this. But instead of saying, you know, in this documentary, instead of saying, well, actually what happened was that the German government prints a crazy amount of money. Well, first of all, goes to war in World War One, massively racks up mammoth amounts of debt from the banks. Then tries to print itself out by basically destroying their own currency, destroying the people's money, destroying the people's savings, smashing it to all hell. I mean, people literally, most people have heard the stories of the hyperinflation that happened during the Weimar Republic.
Yeah.
After World War One, there was people literally, it was a bit cheaper to burn the piles of money than to buy wood with it. In this documentary, they come in, oh, Hitler then got, you know, riled the people up because, the economy was shot and the French were bullying everyone around.
It comes back to this meme that the Nazis themselves used, which was that there was this conspiracy against them, right? But there are aspects of conspiracy in what happened, but the real conspiracy was with the banks themselves and the global financial oligarchs, the puppet masters who financed Hitler, right? The very people who enabled Hitler were the real conspirators, the real villains, because they wanted this war, right? They let it happen on purpose, but they helped it happen in a variety of ways, the most important of which was giving Hitler plenty of credit so he could build up his massive arsenal. And, you know, that's a pattern we've seen in history again and again, because I mean the world was in the grip of the Great Depression at this time. That war was killing all those people and destroying all that property and annihilating, you know, just massive amounts of real estate and, you know, infrastructure. Had a massive economic stimulus effect immediately the war ended. As we know, there was this huge economic recovery. That was an engineered situation, and that is the conspiracy, and that's a real conspiracy. But the Nazi version of the conspiracy, oh, the Jews and the bankers and these various people that we were trying to save Germany. No, you were manipulated because you're a psychopathic puppet egomaniac into that type of insane action.
Yeah, and that comes back to his childhood and this lack of empathy. Empathy in general, just total lacking of it, and that's a very dangerous part for. And then on top of that, you have this you know, in World War One, he also witnessed a lot of atrocities, and you know, some of his battalion, out of a group of 40, you know, most of them were killed, apart from a few, including himself, got away, and so, you know, coming through as a young lad through this, he really got messed in the head, and then give someone like that absolute power is extremely, extremely dangerous, and we can see now that it is. And for anyone to say, he did a good, you know, the government apparatus on top of the banking apparatus and the military complex, you know, the government apparatus of Germany was just as fault, just as much fault. And then for someone to come into government saying, "Let the government rescue you," you know, it's really ridiculous to say that two sides of the same thing can be different. And when really it wasn't, it was just a manipulation, like you said.
And as part of that, they eliminated all dissent. Dissent was made completely illegal immediately. As soon as those enabling powers were granted, there were mass arrests. Any journalists who'd written anything against Hitler, they had a long list of enemies. They went and arrested all of them. And a lot of them were killed outright. A lot of them were just assassinated. This really happened. Yeah. I mean, you can't really dispute that, because it really did happen. There's so much evidence for it. And so these people who say that... people who try to paint the Nazis as not really being that bad just have to kind of omit even talking about it. Okay? And that's what you find in this film. They don't even mention it. They don't mention the mass arrests. They don't mention the setup of concentration camps. And I'm not even talking about Jews. It wasn't just Jews. They were putting all kinds of people in concentration camps. Now, the problem is the Jewish propaganda from Israel has warped people's minds, because they've just made us only ever think about Jews, when in fact the Nazis were a totalitarian society who persecuted anyone who got in their way.
Yeah, if you were gay, if you were, if you were mentally handicapped, if you were physically handicapped.
Well, that was part of the eugenics philosophy, which was widely adopted in the US and Canada. But the eugenics philosophy was We've got to make the master race. We can't have feeble-minded people. We've got to eliminate them from the gene pool. That was a very sick, very twisted, messed up kind of pseudoscience that they adopted as part of their power trip.
Mm. Oh, it's so sad. It's really, really, really sad. And that's why I keep coming back to the moral of the story, is that you can look at all of this stuff and try to niggle about the details, but the general truth of the matter is that absolute power is just extremely dangerous, and we should always be wary of false flag attacks, of legislation that comes through that gives more and more power to a state apparatus. Even if they think that current leader isn't evil or hasn't got the capacity or is looking out for the best of you, in actual fact, the next person that comes along can just overtake these powers. And even if the leader isn't bad, the whole apparatus, the secret services, all of these things are there and aren't elected. And then you get the extremities where the person in power just removes any electoral or democratic construction around what can remove him from power or her. So yeah. That's why I keep harping on about it. But I just I'm a big fan of solutions.
Yeah.
And instead of constantly pumping out problems, is to look at what's happening in the future of how the future can be brighter. And that's why I just quickly mentioned stuff like the blockchain technology, because now people are writing amazing software where Wikipedia and stuff like that can be decentralized, so we don't have a centralized entry of history, but we have an unalterable database that's starting to happen, which is an amazing growth, an amazing invention.
Yeah, it's going to be much harder to manipulate history. I mean, I think we're on a winning path. As negative as it all seems, we're on a winning path. I mean, we just basically don't see it. We're right in the middle of this struggle, right? But we are the natural. And when I say we, I mean those who believe in freedom. We're out of time. Josh, thanks so much. We'll be back next week.
Thank you, Harry. Thank
Truth
you.
News, yeah, thanks Ciao. So much for being grace. Truth News Radio Australia signing out. We will be back next week. Actually, no, we'll be back in the next hour. Stay tuned.